Welcome to Torah Imechanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Batya Brander, and today we will be learning Hosea chapter 3. In the last class, we learned about a mashal of a husband and his unfaithful wife who runs after her lovers, thinking that they have been the source of all of her sustenance. Yet, after numerous steps that the husband makes to get her to abandon her lovers and to return faithfully to him have all failed, as a last resort, he takes her to a desert, a deserted location far from her lovers. There, he's able to speak to her heart, and she begins to return to him. The chapter ends with a beautiful description of Acharis Hayamim, the end of days, where we'll have a completely permanent connection, bound together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ve'eras Tichli Be'emunah. We will be bound with God with faith and permanently. One wonders how the husband is able to accomplish this about-face in a desolate location that's devoid of all luxuries and has limited resources and only the bare minimum available in order to eke by and survive. This chapter, chapter 3, will address the state of the Jew in exile and will shed some light on the mechanism which inspires and spurs that turnabout, using yet another extraordinary request regarding Hosea and a traitorous woman. Our chapter is short, only 5 verses long, but it is rich with content. Pasuk Aleph, Vayomer Hashem Elai, Od Lech Ehav Isha Ahavas Rea, Umena Ephes. And Hashem said to me, go again, love a woman beloved by her companion, yet an adulteress. Ka'avas Hashem es Bnei Yisrael, like Hashem who loves Bnei Yisrael. V'heim ponim el Elohim acherim, and they instead turn to other gods. V'ohave ashishe anavim, lovers of goblets of grapes, or wine. It's interesting to note two distinctions between this instruction and the instruction of the first chapter. First of all, he's not instructed to take her like nesuin, like a marriage, but rather to love her. And secondly, she is not married to anybody else, and therefore, the Malbim points out, her straying is not on the level of real harlotry. It's not halachic adultery. So Hashem instructs Hosea to find a woman who is cherished by one man, and he wants an exclusive relationship with her, yet she behaves promiscuously in order to get gifts from other men. The Malbim points out that here, even though she's not technically adulterous, she is nonetheless traitorous against this man who cherishes her. The Malbim understands this time period to be referring to Gullus, where the Jewish people have a downgrade in their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that his love for Bnei Yisrael is not public, but rather private, and the divine providence is more hidden rather than revealed in open public miracles. And she has a pattern of straying, of adultery, or idolatry, as is the case, turning to Avodah Zarah. But in this case, it's only for such small and mild benefits. Unlike the great gifts that she thought she was getting from her lovers in previous chapters, now she just gets a cup of wine, a goblet of wine, something very minimal. So she derives no substantive benefit from her liaisons. Targum Yonasan explains the significance of the goblet of wine, that when Bnei Yisrael do tshuva, Hashem will view their sins as if they were doing it in a drunken state and weren't really committed to their sins, and thus are less culpable. Perhaps there's another idea here as well. The Jews are in exile, and as such, they have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it isn't the relationship of a married couple. And as the Malbim points out, therefore, her straying is not on the level of adultery. And so the consequences would be less as well. Perhaps this is teaching us that while in Gullus, the consequences of our unholy behavior isn't as dire as the consequences of the holy behavior in the land of Israel. When the Rabban talks about, at the end of Acharemos, the land vomiting out the Jewish people for sinning, Rabbi Dr. Charles Chavel points out that if a particular place is holier than others, then one must observe there more strictly the laws of holiness. The example that the Ramban gives here is about the Kutis who were placed by Assyria into the land of Israel after the 10 tribes were removed, and they're attacked and slain by lions because of the Avodah Zarah that they did, which they didn't experience when they were in their own land. The point that I'm trying to make here is that perhaps the Navi is also telling us that while they're in Gullus, there are lesser consequences and punishments for sins than there were while they were living in Eretz Yisrael. Navi continues, Ve'ekra li b'chamisha asar kesef v'chomer sa'arim v'lesach sa'arim. And I acquired her for me with 15 pieces of silver, a chomer of barley, and a lesach of barley. A chomer is a 30 sa'ah measure, and a lesach is a 15 sa'ah measure. So a lesach is half of a chomer. Some understand the 15 pieces of silver to be referring to the 15th of Nisan when the Jews were taken out of Israel. And in fact, the word Nisan, written chaser, without the yod, has the same gematria as kesef. But others, like the Malbim, take a harsher view of this pasuk. Normally, a ksuva would be 50 kesef, 50 silver coins. And the cost of purchasing a maidservant in the market would be 30 silver coins. But she's getting only 15, half of the value of a servant in the market, because she might not be exclusive to him. Additionally, a chomer can provide a person with 360 meals. A lesach could provide a person with 180 meals. Thus, she's getting the equivalent of 1.5 meals a day instead of 2, because half of her nights she's not going to be around, because she's gadding about. Additionally, sa'ar, barley, is fodder for animals, and that's why it was used in the sota's water. So too, instead of being provided with wheat, she's going to be provided with sa'ar, this lower level of food. The first two psukim focused on her past behavior, her past mistakes. But now let's try and capture the transformation that should occur. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, Va'omare leha, and I said to her, Yamim rabim teshvili, remain as mine for many days. In other words, wait for me. Lo tizni, do not play the harlot. V'lo tihila ish, do not be to another man, meaning don't get married to another man either. V'gam ani elech, and also I will be towards you. In the metaphor, the man says to the woman, we're not going to be together, but I want you to remain exclusive and wait for me, and I too will wait for you, and I won't be with anybody else either. But after many days, I will take you back to me as a wife. During this interim period, the support that he provides is very, very minimal, very rationed. The Malbim points out the connection between 15 of Kesef and the name of Hashem, Yud, and then a Hey, which has the gematria of 15. Because in Golus, the name of Hashem is not complete. There's a similar idea when we say the pasuk Kiyad al Kes Ka, when Amalek's hand is on the throne of Hashem, trying to fight against Hashem. So the word for Hashem there is Ka, Yud and He, because it's only half of the name Yud, K, Vav, K. So Bnei Yisrael are instructed not to turn to Avodah Zarah and not to turn to any other religions as well. And Hashem says he also will wait for the Geula to unite with her forever and permanently in the future times. He then talks about the Golus period more explicitly. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Ki yamim rabim yeshvu bnei Yisrael, for many days Israel, the children of Israel, shall remain. Ein melech, ein sar, with no king and no lords. Ein zevach ve'ein matseva, neither sacrifice nor pillar, some sort of a single stoned altar. Ein ephod, ein trufim. Here, ephod is probably representing the Urim V'Tumim, and the Trophim is probably representing some sort of idols, as we recall from the story of Rachel hiding the Trophim of Lavan. So there's a dichotomy here. On the one hand, we won't have the kingdom of David to protect us. On the other hand, the lords of the non-Jewish nations are also not going to protect us. We don't have the opportunity for karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, but we're also not going to use altars to worship to idols. The Gra explains that during this time period of Galus, it's going to be different than the time beforehand. Miyamim she'avru, he says, in days of past, if a person wants to go in the path of complete tumah, then he would be able to actually go in that path. But now, in the state of Galus, he's not going to be able to achieve neither Kedusha Gemura, complete holiness, nor the opposite, a state of complete impurity. This pasuk complements, or perhaps supplements, the ideas presented in the previous chapter. Somehow the withdrawal from both extremes will allow for a reset. So the midbar of the previous chapter isn't just a physical withdrawal into a place of gullus, but it will be a metaphysical withdrawal as well. It makes me think of different types of vacations that people might take. Some people want to do and see and go and accomplish. There are bucket lists to check off and experiences to be had. Yet for others, it's about recalibration, a resetting of priorities, which is much better accomplished in a cabin in the woods. And it's not just in spite of the lack of luxuries, but dafka because of the lack of luxuries, that one is able to step back, see the bigger picture, and prioritize. And through that experience, we can reach the final pasuk of the chapter, pasuk 5. Achar yeshvu b'nei Yisrael, after b'nei Yisrael return, referring either to tshuva that they've done, or possibly a return to Eretz Yisrael, uvikshu es Hashem Elokechem, and they will seek out the Lord their God, v'es David Malkam, and David their king, upachadu al Hashem, and they will worry about pleasing Hashem, v'al tuvo, and for his goodness, which some say is the Beis HaMikdash, ba'acharis hayamim, at the end of days. This stage is a reversal of the state that the Jews have been in since the time of Yeravam ben Nevat, when he split the kingdom, prevented the Jews from reaching the Beis HaMikdash, and installed idols. Here the Jewish people will seek out Hashem, seek out Malchus Beis David, the kingdom of David, and will seek out the Beis HaMikdash. The Chiddush shares that after this withdrawal state, we are going to seek out the Shekhinah, because the Shekhinah has never left from the Kotel HaMa'aravi, and that we will seek out Talmidei Chachamim to teach us the path of tshuva, and we will long for salvation. So let's recap. We started the parak with Hosea's instruction to establish an understanding with a woman who is cherished by one, but seeks out others to be with. And her behavior is not adultery since she's not married, just like Hashem's love for Bnei Yisrael, and they turn to other gods, but with such minute benefits. Hoshea acquires her for 15 pieces of kesef, silver, and a chomer of barley, and a lesech of barley, representing that she gets less than full support. But once she lives through a faithful period of time, a time of exclusivity, though she's not with this man, she nonetheless waits for him. This is our state in Golus. We need to uphold our side of the agreement to continue to stay faithful to Hashem, even though he doesn't reveal himself to us in an opened way the way he did when we were living in Eretz Yisrael and had prophecy. And during this period, though we won't be able to have the Kedusha, the holiness that existed in previous time when we had a Beis HaMikdash, we also won't experience the lower levels of Tumah, of impurity and sin, like the rampant idol worship that existed during that time as well. And during this detox state, we can reset our priorities and seek out Hashem, seek out David Melech Yisrael, long for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. May we see it rebuilt speedily in our days. Thank you for learning Le'iloi Nishmas Gilbert Carcenti, Menachem Mendel Ben Saud.